Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Our next guest, 12-year TV voice of the Oregon Ducks. Also, former senior associate AD at Oregon and at Syracuse. By the way, one of those schools is not playing in the fall. One is planning to play. Joe Giansante, he knows what it's like to be in the room when big decisions are made. Friend of this show, joining us from an airport, I think. Where are you flying? What's going on?
I'm actually coming to Oregon. I got a little family stuff to deal with here in Oregon, but I'm based in smoky Los Angeles now, which is just not good. It looks like Oregon a couple of years ago in the fall. Remember that when the smoke permeating everything? But, yeah, it's a beautiful day to be here in Oregon for a couple of days, but mostly in L.A. So, all great, though. I'm happy to tell you, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What's it like to fly right now? I got to know. I haven't been on a plane since this all started. I came back from Vegas in the Pac-12 tournament, and I have not been back to the airport.
Well, the airports are empty. Then PDX is essentially empty. There's no security lines. You have to wear a mask, of course, like everywhere, with no problem. The planes are about half full, but for the most part, it's super easy, especially for somebody who flies a lot for business. I currently work for Eastman. They're selling Azunia tequila and portal potato vodka and Burnside whiskeys and way coffee rum around the country. And it's very different out there flying when you have to do it, for a living and to grow these businesses that are, having to deal with the COVID restrictions and everything, especially like a beverage company. It's been brutal.
Let me ask you, because you've been in the room when big decisions are made and the Pac-12 deciding, hey, it doesn't want to play. It sort of folded up and put the fall season away and other conferences are not. I got to know what your reaction was as you saw that all go down. Did the Pac-12 get it right? Did they jump the gun? What's going on nationally?
Well, John, I think it's knowing how those things go. I think that the schools, the athletic directors and the coaches absolutely wanted to play. And yet if you look at it critically, they put out a schedule and a week later everything changed. Well, nothing changed with COVID in a week. There was nothing new. And with with COVID, people could come up with any argument or any calculation they want to. Spotty and unreliable, and nobody knows what to believe anymore. Nobody has any credibility anymore. So if you want to believe, what the risks are, you can believe anything. My big thing, John, I was devastated because what nobody's doing, and this is the difference between the leagues, is in the Pac-12, the inverse risks are never assessed. And I think that politically the same sort of thing. Like, what are the risks of not playing? Let's spend as much time talking about what are the risks if we don't play as much time as we're spending about not playing. And when there's an inertia that gets going down a certain road, it really catches a lot of momentum. There's a lot of copycat stuff that happens. I know for a fact the West Coast Conference and the Big Sky were simply waiting for the Pac-12 to make a decision because they didn't think they could make a decision differently than that league, which just shows you how this business operates, John. I mean, the fact that there's no Pac-12 football, the ramifications of this are so serious and long-term detriments that will come from this that it will take years and years for these programs to ever recover. And we can go through what some of those are. But without looking at the inverse thing, John, I can tell you, having been around a company called Vivature Sports Solutions that I used to work with when I was at Syracuse, they're the ones who are doing the testing for Major League Baseball through a Quidel test. It's a swab, and you get a result in 15 minutes. So you test the entire team every day. You never put anybody on the field that has a negative test or that has a positive test. You can guarantee that every day. And I know that that those kids, the treatment they get, the doctors they're with, the lives they live together, same dorm, same rooms, together in their apartments, with the best doctors, with the best medical treatment, they are far safer in a football team environment than they are back home, than they are on the regular campus community. I don't know how anybody could ever come to a conclusion that they were less safe by not playing football. It's just baffling. And I think that you see that in the ACC, where the doctors at Duke and other universities are saying, look, this is they're safer. You saw Jim Harbaugh make that argument in Michigan. In the Big 12, you know, people are making that argument. We haven't heard one thing from the Pac-12 about whether they assessed that or not and how they could make the statement that it wasn't more risky to go ahead and shut it down like they did. So I'm flabbergasted. I think there's conclusions that you can draw if you're a critical thinker. If nothing changed, John, from the day they put the schedule out to the day they canceled it, then you have to go to the next level. Who has the liabilities? What were they scared of? The people that have the liabilities are the states. So if for some reason someone were to get sick and it was a liability, the state of Oregon or the state of California or the state of Washington, Arizona, et cetera, would be responsible. That means the governor's offices get involved. Absolutely, without question, that would happen, because they're ultimately the ones that have any liabilities. And if there's ever a big lawsuit, you know, coming down in the athletic department by a coach or any kind of gender discrimination or anything, those always go right up to the state level, and the risk gets assessed. So there's no doubt to me that's what happened. It had to be that's what happened. And the momentum got to be not to play rather than to wait a little while and see what the other leagues were going to do. But if you want to just assess whether kids are going to be safe, more safe going home to their environments or under the best treatment of the best doctors and getting tested every day or every other day, I don't even think that's close, John.
We're talking to Joe Giansanti, someone who knows what it's like to make big decisions. He's in the room, former senior associate AD at Oregon and at Syracuse. What do you think the SEC and the Big 12 are thinking? And as they watch the Pac-12 and Big 10 folded up, that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on them.
Well, it does put a lot of pressure on them. They'll put the, you know, a lot of eyeballs on it. I actually think, John, again, inversely, it's the other way around. The pressure on the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to not play when the Big 12 and the SEC show that it can be done. Can you imagine the recruiting classes that people are going to lose? What about elite players right now? I mean, if you're number five at Oregon and you're going to be an NFL draft pick, you know, what is the Kalon Thibodeau going to do? He's got 2 years to show the NFL what he can do. He's already had one spectacular year as a freshman. So does he even... Is he going to sit out a year, play one more year, and then go to the NFL? Or is he going to find somewhere to play? I mean, you're talking about gutting a ton of talent out of the conferences that are not playing, because you've got the elite players who are going to want to figure out, how am I going to get to the NFL? What's the route? Can I stay here and do that or not? Do I just drop out right now and start preparing for it and just work out? You know, because I've already shown a little bit. I mean, that part of it is going to be, from a team and a talent perspective, I think you can forget about competing with those other leagues for at least 5 years, for a full recruiting cycle. Then there's the coaches. You know, do you want to be somewhere where where something happens like this and it can't play and nobody will give you an answer on what the return metric is? Because, John, if the return metric is nobody can get sick ever, that's never going to happen, not for years. So what is the metric? If an 18-year-old healthy kid who has a 99.99999 chance of recovering from COVID if he gets it or she gets it, and then you cancel a season because they get it, that's never going to stop, even with a vaccine. The vaccine doesn't cure COVID. It just prevents a large number of people from actually getting it, but there's still going to be COVID cases. So what is the metric for us to get back? And then to think, John, they're going to be able to play in the spring. Any player who wants to be in the NFL draft is not going to want to be playing in the spring and putting injury risk that close to the draft. So you've got that to deal with, got the revenues to deal with, and the fact that everybody expects the winter to be tougher when it comes to COVID, because they believe that the virus will have a long-standing life in the weather and with the other flus that are out there and the general lack of health that happens in wintertime. So, I mean, to me, and Urban Meyer talked about that the other day, how are you going to play? But it was right there, John. The MLB model was right there. The salute, what happened was Harold Reynolds, a great Oregonian. You know Harold. He's an awesome guy. Works for MLB Network. Harold was in, from Corvallis. I was asked by these guys at Vivature, do you know any at MLB? And so I put him in touch with Harold. Literally, 30 seconds later, we're on the phone with the commissioner's office, and we told him about that this group had these Quidel tests that you can get everybody's 100% positive test accuracy, 100%. And they had these machines, and they got the machines to MLB. Well, the Major League Baseball commissioner's office didn't mandate it because the owners are so involved in what's happening. So the teams that didn't follow the protocols or didn't bring the machines in are the ones that had the two outbreaks. But right now, Major League Baseball is happening because of Harold Reynolds' relationship with the commissioner's office that got these tests to him right when they were having that breakdown on that Saturday afternoon when Rizzo with the Nationals wanted to pull this team out of practice. So this is a disaster. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody's testing. Now it's great. They have a management system. They know what's going on. They know where people, you know, they've got the contract tracing down. There's just technology around it. The kids, the players get tested every day with a non-invasive swab of the nostril. That's going to happen. That was proposed to several Pac-12 schools, and I know of one that said, we can't do that. It's too expensive, $40 a test. So there's just a lot there, John, that fans, I think, are going to be really angry about over the next 6 months. So I look at it the other way. You know, what risk is the Pac-12 taking and the Big Ten taking by not playing as opposed to the other leagues?
Joe Giansante, former deputy AD at both Syracuse and the University of Oregon, joining us. Let's talk a little bit about Oregon, because you've been behind the scenes there as a longtime broadcaster, deputy AD. You know it, you love it. But how is Oregon as an athletic department different than the others? Because you got a chance to work behind the curtain there.
Well, that's a good question, John. Yeah, I think, you know, clearly the relationship with Nike makes it different. The culture that Nike helped instill makes it different. I used to always talk about, you know, the nature of what Oregon was able to do to make themselves a national name and then to have success and make investments on that success that could sustain it. But without question, you know, it starts with Phil Knight, and not just that, you know, not just the gifts that Phil has given, but the one thing that if I'm ever at a conference or talking with anybody about, you know, my time at Oregon, it's the culture that Phil gave and Nike gave Oregon about approaching it, that you can be great. You don't have to take your spot, you know, in life, your allotments that people think you should be in, that you can achieve and go beyond. And that's really the culture of Nike. And so it was that gift. It's not just, here's a bunch of money and go build a building, but it was about the culture inside the building. And then it had to be paired up, John. I mean, it had to be Phil Knight on the outside, Dave Frohnmayer on the inside, and Pat Kilkenny as the AD. Those three aligned at the top is what created everything that you've seen beyond that point. So, and Phil and Mike Bellotti were always aligned at the top. You know, and Dave Frohnmayer was there, but once Pat Kilkenny was able to become the AD, that allowed things to happen, because now you've got somebody highly accomplished, incredible intellect and instinct, and not afraid to take the kinds of chances that you need to take if you want to be great. And that was the combo that made it happen. I think it was a lightning in a bottle situation, a once in a lifetime deal. But if you don't have all three pillars in that, I don't think that what's happening or has happened, you know, what happened, I think you winning the Rose Bowl, Oregon athletics, Oregon football has been built to win the Rose Bowl. And that's Phil, and that's Pat, and that's Dave Frohnmayer in the foundational aspects of it. And now that's, you know, Mario Cristobal. And, you know, I think that he's been given the leeway to do what he needs to do to win the league by having, you know, appropriate recruiting budgets and, you know, be able to get out there and have staff that he needed to have. Those things are going to be really tough to keep in place, John, without $40 to $80 million coming in over the next year. I don't know how in the world they're going to figure that out. I mean, the number of staff members that are, you know, probably looking at long, you know, at least annual furloughs or other things is just going to be dramatic. I'm not sure how they're going to start covering it. It's not like Major League Baseball. They just throw the value of the team down the road. You know, if they lose $300 million this year, it doesn't matter because they're increasing you know, their value every year in the franchise by 20 to 100 million, depending on the city, 5 years down the line, they'll just take that loss and assimilate it into the valuation of the team. And you can't do that in college athletics. The state's got to pay the bill. So it's going to be really impossible.
Joe Giansante with us, former deputy AD, University of Oregon, also at Syracuse. Joe, before I cut you loose, what do you think happens? The SEC, Big 12, ACC, still hoping to play. Pac-12, Big 10, saying, nope, we're going to try it in the spring. Give me the big picture. What do you think a year from now as we look back, what happens?
I think the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC are going to play. And I think there are going to be kids that get diagnosed with COVID. The vast majority of them that won't even know they had it and won't have any symptoms or be sick. I think they'll do a good job PR-wise delineating between getting COVID and being sick with COVID and the level of somebody being sick, because that hasn't happened at all in society. And I think they'll do a really good job of that. So they'll show that the athletes that they have are, you know, have to be quarantined. They go out and then they come back, and then you don't have to necessarily worry about that player for a while in case the antibodies end up, you know, working. Another thing that we don't know about COVID. So I think that's what will happen. I think in the spring, I can't see any way that would ever happen. I'm not a doctor. I'm only listening to the other people who are saying that COVID is going to increase. So if your standard is nobody can get COVID, John, then I don't know how you get to a point where you're going to do anything, because that's not a standard that's ever going to change. There's not going to be no COVID. And that's one thing that people have had a hard time getting an answer from politicians who have put, you know, lockdowns and such. I'm not criticizing those things, but nobody can give an answer about what's it going to be when we get over, like zero cases. So I think that, you know, the Pac-12 is going to have to suffer, and there's going to be a lot of players that are going to be gone. And you're going to look at three leagues separate themselves from the other two leagues, and then you'll find those other leagues trying to Pac-12 and the Big 10 and the other smaller leagues trying to just pick themselves up off the ground and rebuild after it's over, whenever that is. I think it'll be real tough. In the meantime, John, I'm just going to go out and sell some booze. Is that okay?
Hey, Eastside Distilling, one of my favorites, man.
We need it. I mean, right? I mean, I hate to say that in a sense, but, I mean, as you know, alcohol sales are up, and, you know, the stress levels are crazy, and we have some really great artisan products, too, and, you know, craft products with Azunia Tequila. Now, just to connect the dots, Pat Kilkenny owned Azunia Tequila, and that's how I came to work there. So when Pat left Oregon, I went with him, and then essentially been working on it with Azunia Tequila, you know, for quite a long time. And then Eastside Distilling acquired Azunia, and with Portal Potato Vodka and Burnside Whiskeys and now Azunia Tequila, I mean, my goal is to make Portal Potato Vodka like Tillamook cheese. You know, everybody's so proud. And when I walk in the store here in L.A. and I see Tillamook cheese everywhere, for a kid who grew up in Forest Grove, like, that's awesome. Like, I love that. I've been to that plant a million times, crabbing in the bay, whatever. I'm a true Oregonian, John. So now we need to do that with Portal Potato Vodka and get that across the country and have it be like Tillamook cheese from a brand perspective. And then Azunia Tequila is everywhere. People will see that. Hopefully you can pick it up. I'll get you a little sampler, John.
I love it. All right, Joe, I appreciate you. Thank you for your expertise and your insight. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, John, appreciate the time, and best of luck to everybody, and good health to everyone who's out there as well.
Joe Giansante, former broadcaster in the Oregon program, also deputy athletic director at Oregon and at Syracuse. It's a different opinion, right? I mean, it's like it makes you think. Somebody in the end is going to end up being right about this. I'm hopeful that putting the athletes and the students first is a positive for the Pac-12. But if the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC pull off college football and nobody gets sick, or there aren't serious ramifications from people who do get sick, I think a lot of us are going to be left wondering, did the Pac-12 and the Big 10 jump the gun? I think that's a fair question, right? 2 weeks from now, will we have the same information? Nope. A lot of new information. That's what's happened all along here. All right, leave it here. Anna's popped into the studio. We'll talk to her coming up. For those of you interested in low interest rates, Golden Oak Lending, goldenoaklending.com, 2.5% 30-year fixed rate. Yes, let them do the free mortgage checkup. Let them show you what they can do for you. Maybe take some cash out, lower your monthly payment, shorten the term of your loan, whatever it may be, your strategy or your goal, Golden Oak Lending can help you. Go to goldenoaklending.com for that free mortgage checkup. They'll take care of you like they've taken care of so many other BFT listeners. goldenoaklending.com. Get the podcast on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get a podcast. I think you can ask Amazon Alexa as well for the podcast. Somebody let me know if she knows where the podcast is. Bottom line, Anna has stopped into the studio, as she does every day on the show. How you doing?
Good.
You ever had an interaction with a ghost?
Not that I know of.
We're talking about ghosts on the show because they found a corpse hidden for 30 years during the renovation of a mansion. That was interesting.
Huh. But how do we know that the spirit of that corpse was still hanging around?
Well, Adriana said started to tell a ghost story about somewhere she lived. She encountered a ghost.
Spooky.
I don't even want to say if I've encountered a ghost, because what if there is a ghost? I don't want to piss it off. What if there's a ghost in the room right now?
Could be.
Ghost would be like, what? I've been here this whole time.
And you don't know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you jerk. It's about to get serious. Yeah. How you doing today? I asked the other two, what are you going to do this weekend? Inform me.
Is it Friday? Oh, it's Friday.
You do this every week. I say, hey, have a good weekend. You go, what?
It's not a bit. Dude, it's Friday.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well,
a whole week went
Monday, and then, you know, Tuesday came, and they canceled sports, and then Wednesday came, and we talked about it, and then Thursday came.
Oh, man. My sense of, like, time and place is all screwed up.
Yeah. So, is that a problem in the pandemic? Because there was a rhythm. Kids were, you know, not that they'd be in school in the summer, but I had a hard time when the kids went to digital learning, because I knew when they were back in the house, it was the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, there was a signal. Hey, it's weekend.
Yeah, no, I just think my brain in general is going to mush. I forget things every day now. I can't keep my schedule straight.
I want to pepper you with some things we've been talking about on the show today.
Okay.
Ellen is under fire for fostering a toxic work environment. What do you think are the key things that go into avoiding a toxic work environment?
Not insisting that the people that come into your green room either brush their teeth or chew their gum before they enter because you have a sensitive nose.
Wait, that was a thing? Was that part of the hostile work environment?
I believe so.
Everybody had to have fresh, minty breath?
Uh-huh.
Really?
I don't know.
But in general,
let's
just talk in general. Uh-huh. Like, toxic work environment. If you're a consultant, we're going to hire you. We're going to bring you into our company. We're starting a company. What do we need to know to avoid a toxic work environment?
I don't know, because I've only ever worked in news. And news in general is just a pretty toxic work environment. Like, the fact that you would get called into your news director's office and pretty consistently get yelled at if you missed your deadline or screwed something up, like, that was just kind of accepted. And maybe not as much anymore. But don't you think, like, newsrooms have a different environment that way?
Yeah. I mean, you get weird people in newsrooms anyway.
First of all, yes.
Bunch of weirdos.
Yeah.
People, don't touch my chair. People are like, you know, I got a special keyboard. People who are uber, like, OCD, everything lined out on their desk. And then next to them, a hoarder.
Yeah.
Like, the weirdest collection of individuals in
newsrooms. You could
probably
say that with most workplaces, but I do tend to think that the news industry attracts.
Why is that?
Eccentric people.
Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of the nature of the work, you know, your tolerance for topics that span the spectrum.
Yeah.
And sort of the inconsistency of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Like, like, I loved it, right? Because I come in.
It's not boring.
It's not boring. You're doing a different story every day. You're meeting new people every day. You know, you come across weird things, and that's part of the fun. But I think for some people, that would drive them crazy.
All right, for people who don't know how the news industry works, let's talk about television news in particular here. And, all right, so you go to work in the morning. What time is the day shift reporting crew getting to work?
Day shift, usually about 9.
All right.
8:30, 9 o'clock.
What happens during
a morning meeting?
What time's the morning meeting?
Usually around 9:30 or so, maybe. You know, you gather around and you talk about the stories of the day. The assignment editor, assignment manager will sort of go through the laundry list of, you know, police blotter type, press release type information about stuff that you know has already happened overnight that everybody needs to be caught up on, or events that are already scheduled during the day, you know, if there's a major press conference or something that somebody's likely going to be assigned to. So they go down that list, major crimes that happened overnight, and then, at least in the newsrooms that I worked in, you know, reporters, producers, photographers, everybody had a chance to pitch stories that they thought should be covered. You had an opportunity to kind of collectively talk about that.
Let me ask you something, because, you know, it was weird for me when I first got to know you, because you never knew what you were doing that day. You would go into work in the morning. You could end up at Mount St. Helens.
Yeah.
You could end up at the Oregon coast. You could end up anchoring. You could end up like it was just like all of a sudden, Anna's going to the Oregon coast. Was there ever places you didn't like to go, or how, as a, because you're getting assigned that, right? Uh-huh. Like somebody, news director saying, Anna, I really need you in Tillamook today.
Yeah.
Or Anna, I need you in Eugene, or I need you on campus at Oregon State. Like, I have to think there were some places where you didn't want to go and you had to go.
I honestly loved it. I loved that part of the job. I love that I got to see so much of the Pacific Northwest in a different way because of my job. I loved it so much I bought like a roadside geology book, because you'd spend so much time riding in the vehicle with a photographer to an assignment, driving through, you know, portions of central eastern Oregon, or you'd be down in like Jackson County. And I just got curious about the geography that was around me. And I'm so grateful that I got to go everywhere. You know, sometimes it was, gosh, you know, you'd get to work and you'd have to go cover a wildfire a distance away. So they would actually charter a flight. You'd fly a private flight to go cover this wildfire. And somehow you'd have like, you'd have to back time it. You'd have 45 minutes on the ground to get the images and the interviews that you needed before you had to like make TV out of it and start creating, you know, putting the story together. So sometimes the deadlines were intense, but I just loved that. You know what I loved?
What?
I loved meeting like really different people all over the state.
I love the same thing about this job. And by the way, remember the yesterday on the show, the 12-year-old who was left-handed?
Yes.
He and his grandpa were on the road trip.
Yes.
They've called back in. They're now in Nevada.
Whoa. They made good time.
Apparently, they're at Area 51.
No, they're not.
I don't know. Hey, what are you guys doing? Welcome back, Marshall and Tom.
Hey.
How you doing?
How you doing? Good. We're almost Area 51. We're in Hawthorne. He wants to see Area 51 today. So, still doing the road trip.
I love that.
And you're the best grandpa ever. Can you be my grandpa?
Well, you know, it's kind of cool. He's having a good time. He's 12, and I, you know, probably won't get a chance to do it a whole lot longer. So, anyway.
Well, I don't know. People are living to be 120 now, so
yeah,
you might.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you something real quick?
Yeah.
Would it be that awful if they just opened up the games and just everybody wore a mask and they used hand sanitizer when they went in the stadium? Would people really, you think people would, or even if they did half as many people, every other seat? I don't understand why it's such a big deal, really. I see people, we're walking in the Redwood Forest yesterday and people have masks on in the forest.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of inconsistency, and maybe we can speak. Thanks to you guys. Drive safely. Have a good trip. I think there's a lot of inconsistency with sort of people's comfort level. The problem with the stadium is you have a closed environment in a lot of places. You got liability involved, and you have public institutions like Oregon and Oregon State, if you're talking about college game. But I think the bigger issue is frankly keeping the players safe. And I know that, you know, we could talk about low risk, we could talk about low mortality rate. There's a lot we don't know. There's a lot that we have learned in the last 3 months about this, right? At the beginning, it was, you know, hand sanitizer and don't buy a mask, right? Then it became, yes, you need to have a mask. Then it became, this thing's airborne and everybody needs to be in a mask, but distanced. And now, for some reason, we've arbitrarily come up with 6 feet as the safe distance. I don't know if that's going to hold up. Like, a couple of months from now, they might be going, you know what? The actual distance is 8 feet. Like, and I understand the frustration from people like Tom and Marshall who are in the middle of a forest, because I think that probably when you're outside in a environment like that, unless you're right next to people, do you really have to have a mask on?
I see it. Like, you know, we go on hikes in the area and people basically, it's that thought that if you can't maintain 6 feet from people when you're on a trail, which sometimes isn't possible depending on how crowded the trail is, people out of an abundance of caution and I guess consideration for others are wearing the masks.
I am so proud of Tom and Marshall doing a grandpa-grandson trip. As you know, Anna, I was incredibly close to my grandfather, and I knew him well into my 30s, which was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he was 94 years old when he passed away. I got a chance to spend a lot of time with him. I knew him as a person, not just as a grandpa, you know? And I remember being 12 and hanging out with grandpa, going to a Giants game or doing something fun. So I love that they're going on a road trip together in a pandemic. Grandson's never going to forget that.
You went to Reno with him, didn't you?
Went to Reno. Yeah, we didn't go to Area 51. We went to the craps table. That was my grandpa.
Is he the person who taught you to play craps? Because craps is really confusing.
It's
and
not
intimidating.
That confusing. There's a lot going on. It's intimidating.
Yeah, if you totally intimidating.
You go and there's three dealers. There's a lot of yelling and shouting. It's very misogynist. You know, there's a lot of masculine energy at the table. But the truth is, you can walk up to that table and you can play very simple strategy. And that's how my grandfather did. He just said, hey, come here. I'm going to show you. This is how you play the pass line.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you want to play these numbers. And then there's what odds mean. And he sort of walked me through the game. I'll never forget him for that. But I can remember that he was one time he got on a bus with a senior center. In
yes.
the Bay Area,
as senior centers like to do.
Yep, they're bored. They got money. Casino. Get them on the bus. So the casino had them. They shipped him to Reno.
Okay, all the way to Reno.
Yeah, it was a few hours for him, and from the Bay Area, it was quite a trip.
Yeah,
probably 5 or 6 hours.
That's an excursion.
And I was going to college within a drive of that casino,
mm-hmm.
or I might have been doing something else. I don't know what I was there, but I was like, hey, I'm going to be in Reno too. So he and I met up in Reno at a casino and we played craps, and my grandfather missed the bus leaving. I had to drive him back to the Bay Area because he was on a roll and he missed the bus. It alarmed me because how many seniors do they leave? Like, they just left him. Bus took off. And he had another. And on the way, though, we had this incredible discussion. He had in his wallet an IOU from another senior.
Uh-huh.
Because the senior had borrowed money from him at the table. Like people do. Like friends do. Hey, can you give me $50 instead of saving me a trip to the ATM?
Yeah.
So my grandfather gave his friend $50. His friend wrote on a cocktail napkin, I owe you $50 because you're 90 years old. That's what you do because you can't remember it. My grandfather had it in his wallet. He pulled it out while we were driving. I'll never forget this. And he says, what do you think I should do with this? And I said, well, isn't he going to pay you? And he goes, no, no, no. This is like a year old. He said, this guy died after that trip. He said he passed away. And he says, I kind of feel like I should maybe call his relatives and say, hey, before he died, he owed me $50. I said to my grandpa, give me that napkin. You're not collecting an IOU. on somebody who has passed away. When they die, sorry, you didn't collect.
The debts are canceled.
When I'm in my 90s, I'm going to run around and borrow money from everyone. Hey, can I borrow 100? Can I borrow 100? I'll pay you next year.
Let that be a lesson to other octogenarians and above.
Collect right away when you get back to the senior center, or you're not going to see that money again. All right, leave it here. You got the ball.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.